Welcome to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. I'm your host, Steve Stewart. We're here every Tuesday and Thursday at 11 a.m. Don't forget to like us on Facebook at Above the Fold, and you can stream the show live at realtalk93.com. Above the Fold is brought to you in part by Spartan Stoneworks. One of the most common and cost-effective upgrades anyone can make to their home is the kitchen. You're almost guaranteed to increase the value of your home with an updated kitchen, but quality materials like granite, quartz, and marble countertops can get expensive. Well, not when you go with Spartan Stoneworks. Pricing will be very competitive when compared to other places because the way they look at it is if they didn't carve the stone materials out of the mountain, they're not going to charge a price like they did. So they have great pricing, amazing craftsmanship, and quick turnaround from an honest local company. Call Spartan Stoneworks for any countertop replacement in your kitchen, bathroom, garage, or outdoor space. They do it all. Give them a ring at 765-2037, 765-2037. And we appreciate their sponsorship. All right, well, everybody's happy FSU is winning. We are, I follow a lot of this stuff on Twitter. I did manage to see a little bit of the game last night, but it is so much different on Twitter when the FSU is winning in one of the major sports. And they're winning in a number of sports, actually, if you really look into it. But it's good. Hey, you know, the COVID numbers are down and FSU is winning. The weather's beautiful. So everybody should have a little bit of a giddy up in their step this week. They'll have a tough challenge. They're going to be playing Michigan, I think, in the next round. And so we'll keep an eye on that. But thanks for tuning in today to Above the Fold. There's a lot going on locally. We're going to get you up to date. In our second segment today, we'll follow up on some of the local issues. We've got stuff that you probably haven't heard about. City manager is going to recover some legal bills because of some ethics complaints, which he won in. We'll give you some details on that. I haven't seen that covered in any other media outlet. We've got Governor DeSantis made his five appointments to the Children's Services Council, and we'll go through those five names. You know, he had a list of 15 that was sent to him from Leon County. The Leon County Commission, and now he has selected his five. Very bipartisan slate of people that were chosen. I think he could have been much more partisan about it, given the names, but we'll go over those. There's a city commission meeting on Wednesday. I wanted to highlight a couple of those items to discuss. We've talked about one of them before that deals with law enforcement. And there's also an item that deals with a reentry program for people who are released from prison and local golf courses. So we'll tell you what the city is planning to do there or has been doing. I wasn't completely aware of how they were using the golf courses to help with the reentry program. But we'll talk about that. We're going to spend a segment on some state issues that obviously affect us here locally. The voting bill that Republicans are pushing through the legislature. Want to clarify a couple of things. Actually, what I'm going to do is spend some time on drop boxes because it's an important issue. It's something that came up during the pandemic as a response to the pandemic to make it easier for people to vote. Anytime you make it easier for people to vote, usually there are some downsides to that. And so we want to talk about that because there's a lot of rhetoric between Republicans and Democrats about this issue. And another issue on the voting side of it is money that has been given to election offices from private entities. There's a bill in the Florida legislature that wants to make it illegal or against the rules for private entities to give money to local election offices because the fear is that it's going to be partisan money. And so there was one group that gave hundreds of millions of dollars to election offices during this last election. We're going to tell you who that is. But then we're going to make some comparisons if you would be comfortable getting money from other groups. With the pandemic, again, there were a lot of things that happened. And one of them was taking money from private entities to deal to help with the election process. So we're going to talk about that also. That's in the third segment. Our last segment, we'll go over the weekly COVID numbers, which keep plummeting. We'll talk about some job numbers. There were some revisions to job numbers. And so we want to go over how that impacted Leon County. There's some good news there. And then we want to spend some time looking at a poll that really shows you, it's focused on the on COVID and what people's perceptions are. And there's one question about people's perception of what the rate of hospitalization was if you got COVID. And I think this will show you that if you took the misperceptions that you have on something that is easily verifiable, the number of people in the hospital due to COVID divided by the number of cases, if you look at how off the charts these perceptions are, just imagine from a political realm how people are being so misinformed or not, are just refusing to get the information. So I want to talk about that a little bit. We'll talk about that in the last segment. But in my remaining moments here in the first segment, wanted to touch on which is quickly becoming my favorite state official to talk about, and that is Agriculture Commissioner Nikki Fried. As you remember, we did a story a week or so ago about her connections with her fiance's cannabis companies, her family's connections. We detailed about how one of the people that was appointed to a board was in business with her fiance. Her father is in business with her fiance with a cannabis company. And so we've got I think it's a 1,000-word story that you can read on. You can read about the details there. But something else over the weekend, Nikki Fried, who is before she was agriculture commissioner, she was a marijuana lobbyist. And she ran for agriculture commissioner, understanding that, you know, she was supporting legalization of marijuana. And, you know, she created a couple of, she created the, I guess it was an office to try to impact marijuana policy. She created a committee on medical marijuana. So she's had her hands in all this. Well, she posted something over the weekend on Twitter, and it said, legalizing cannabis solves lots of problems and creates none. Now, that is a pretty bold statement. And so we took that and wrote a story about it because there are a number of issues that come along with legalizing marijuana. Now, look, if you want to argue the net benefit of legalizing cannabis, because of the medical benefits, the tax benefits, look, that's fine. But don't mislead people by saying that this comes with no problems. And now, if you go to Taos Reports, you can see our article on this. It didn't take long to go and find research done in Colorado because, you know, they have provided this, almost like this laboratory, because they legalized marijuana in 2014, and they've had documented issues. Now, again, that's not to say that you can make an argument that the benefits outweigh the cost, but to argue there's no cost is just, it's misleading. It is derelict of someone's duty who is a statewide leader. But if you get back to Colorado, there's a study that the New York Times cited that shows that the rates of hospitalization in Colorado with marijuana-related diagnosis codes increased by almost 100%, 274 per 100,000 hospitalizations in the years prior to legalization, up to 600 hospitalizations per 100,000 beginning in 2015, 2 years after recreational marijuana was legalized. And, you know, there are doctors there that say, look, you know, they've also analyzed data, and they said, the doctor says, there's a disconnect between what was proposed as a completely safe drug, and he says nothing is completely safe. Also, researchers have reported that patients in the EDR with marijuana-related cases were five times as likely to have mental health issues as those with other cases. So, look, it is, again, can you imagine Governor DeSantis tweeting something like this out and it being ignored by the statewide media? This is the other issue here. There's a number of issues here, the tweet being one. The other thing is it being ignored by the statewide media. But the third thing is, and I think this is a question someone needs to ask, is, you know, is Nikki Free doing this because she has her family has a financial interest in cannabis? I mean, you look at the connections with her fiance through these LLCs, and then you look at it, this tweet, which is obviously false, but is promoting cannabis. You begin to wonder, you know, what part of her financial future, we know that her family's involved with cannabis. So is this really appropriate to be doing this without some kind of disclaimers? We'll continue to follow this story because I think it's something that, well, nobody else is covering as one, and also is pretty interesting. All right, when we get back after our break, we will turn to local issues. Got a number of things we want to chat with, so stay tuned. I'm Steve Stewart. She loves to laugh, she loves to sing, she does everything. Hi, welcome back to Above the Fold here. It's Tuesday. Weather's great. FSU's winning. COVID numbers are going down. That's the good news. All right, pivoting to local issues. City Manager Reese Goad, who has been, I guess you could say he has been a rod of criticism. He's been the people lash out. He's got a big job. If you know how our local government works, he is the supervisor of everything in the city. He's appointed in terms, especially of operations. You know, there's a city attorney and a city auditor and a clerk. But for the most part, the buck stops with Reese Goad. So he gets a lot of criticism. And obviously, there's a lot of controversy over how he's appointed. Well, there's a couple of ethics complaints that were filed. And, you know, the way they do this is they keep a lot of this private until they go through shade meetings to see if they have any merit. And these obviously did not. It says, according to the meeting agenda, which will be taken up tomorrow, two complaints were filed in September of last year that alleged Goad pressured subordinates to speak on his behalf at a meeting and directed that campaign signs of some specific candidates for office be removed. So both those complaints were dismissed by the Independent Ethics Board in late December of last year and early this year. And so now, as he's allowed to do per city policy, is seeking about $4,000 in attorney fees. And you know, the agenda item stated that City Manager Reese Goad prevailed on every aspect of the complaints which were brought against him. And so this is, some people are arguing that, you know, these complaints should not be brought because it's going to cost taxpayer money. Listen, we got a city budget of over $700 million. This is $4,000. And I think, you know, this is part of accountability and some transparency here. So we'll see if there's any discussion at all at the meeting. I doubt there will be, but this is an issue that I thought was worth mentioning because, again, you know, if he was found guilty of these things, we'd be talking about them. And this is an independent ethics board, and it is, it looked at these complaints. And I do think they'll have to release some of the documents at some point. And maybe we can go over and see what were some of the things that led them to dismiss them, the complaints. In other news that affects us here locally, Governor DeSantis appointed, you know, as I had said earlier, he appointed five members to the Leon County Children's Services Council. Now, this board is going to have 10 members. Five of them are already appointed. These five came from a list that were submitted to Governor DeSantis by the Leon County Commission. A little bit of controversy, if you remember, over the name Barty Bishop. He was not ultimately selected. He was one of the 15 sent to the governor, but was not selected. The list is, I would say, very bipartisan. It's got people on here that are involved in the process, obviously, but I think that have connections on both sides of the aisle. The first in the list, this is the way it came out in from a press release from the governor's office. Mark O'Brien, who is the president and chief executive officer of TMH, is going to be on the board. Carmen Connor, she is a principal at Leon County Schools Pineview Elementary School. It's really weird how much impact or how much say education, people connected to education are going to have the say on this. And it's weird because Children's Services Council aren't allowed to give money directly to education. It's supposed to go to other issues. But they're going to have a lot of say in this because of some of the people. There's a school board member already on the board. And I also think, I can't remember if Rocky Hanna is on that board or not. I have to check. But definitely know a school board member is. Zandra Glenn, she's a senior consultant of at Financial Transformations. She was she was an assistant pharmacy professor at FAMU. Paul Mitchell is a partner of the Southern Group. I think he's immediate past chair of the Florida Juvenile Justice Foundation, and he went to FSU. And I don't think he'd be he's considered, I would say, a moderate to conservative lobbyist here in Tallahassee. Then Liza McFadden, president of Liza and Partners. She previously served as president and chief executive officer at the Barbara Bush Foundation for Family Literacy. So those are the five that will be put with another five, and then they will help spend about $8 million a year. Not sure when the first meeting is going to happen, but we'll stay on top of that, obviously. But again, this is one of these groups that they're taking new tax money, the $8 million, and they're going to vote on how to spend it. And so this is going to be interesting to follow from a journalistic perspective. It's starting from the ground, the ground up, and you'll be able to, what I'm interested in doing is tracking the impact of this money. Are we going to move any needles? Are we going to say, look, we're spending this money and this is what we're expected to impact? And so that will be interesting to look at. Now, at the city commission meeting, we talked about this a little bit last week. I still think this is very interesting, but the city commission is going to talk about this mobile application for documenting law enforcement interaction. And it says here at the June 3rd, 2020 meeting, the city commission approved project funding for staff to develop or procure a mobile application that allows citizens to record interactions with law enforcement. It says here the app is nearing completion and will soon be available for download, allowing citizens to activate a smartphone camera via voice command and stream video interactions with law enforcement with up to 3 personal contacts, as well as the Tallahassee Police Department video portal. Now, this is one thing, I guess, to have the cameras that are worn by law enforcement officials. This is something a little bit different. I think it's going to be more confrontational. You got to start asking yourself, what is the impact on engaging with the community going to be? We'll see if there's any discussion about that. But this coming from the social justice issues over the summer, we seem to be responding as if we were having some of the same issues that other areas are having. We've been told by law officials and even some citizens that we don't, although we are continuing to move forward with these things. We'll see what they have to say about it, and we'll report that. The last thing I wanted to get to before we get to break is this Department of Corrections / golf update. And this is where it says here, for the past 13 years, the city has worked with the Department of Corrections to host and train inmates as they prepare for release. Employment with the city provides participants with the opportunity to learn a skill or trade, reconnect with their family and community, and secure financial resources. To date, the city has hosted over 500 individuals and hired 75. So to sustain this evolving partnership is an initiative of the city's 5-year plan, and they're using this as an example to invest in enhancements at Jake Gaither Golf Course, because they are using employment opportunities there to help with reentry. Very interesting. We'll have more on this, because reentry is always a controversial issue. And so we'll have more on that. All right, when we get back, we're going to talk about voting. The two voting bills, or two of the voting bills going through the state government, and how they affect us here locally. I want to clear up and give you some more ammunition or information about those bills. So stay tuned. I'm Steve Stewart. You're listening to Above the Fold. Make them smile. It ain't so hard to do if you know how. All right, welcome back to Above the Fold here on Tuesday. I want to pivot from the local issues. Something that affects us locally, but it's happening here in Tallahassee, in the state legislature. And, you know, there's a lot of misrepresentations on both sides. And, you know, this is anytime you have a struggle for power, you get that. And as I have not been shy to talk about, the print media here in Florida is so biased against Ron DeSantis, Governor DeSantis, and Republicans that it's a little bit sickening that you can't actually just look. There's enough that Republicans do that I think would open themselves up to criticism, but just tell the whole truth. You know, I don't understand why it has to be so one-sided. And it is. And so let's talk a little bit about election reform. And if we start nationally, obviously, due to the COVID pandemic, there were some changes that had to be made because of people's fear of the virus and the impact of the virus. And so they had to make sure that people could vote in this election. And so there were changes to some rules. And I'm not going to talk about the impact of those changes right now, but there were changes to the rules. States have different voting rules. And one of the rules involved drop boxes. Drop boxes, you know, vote by mail was something that is basically what it says, vote by mail. You request a ballot, you get it at your home, you cast your vote, you put it in your mailbox, and the post office delivers the ballot to the supervisor of elections in your county. However, there were a number of concerns that there was going to be a onslaught of vote by mail because of the pandemic. And so in some areas, in a lot of areas, drop boxes were used. And there was some concern because what happened is when they started using drop boxes, some of the normal rules were not enforced. And again, this happened because of the pandemic. And you might say, well, look, you know, we had to overlook some of those rules during the pandemic, but now we're going to get back to the way we were doing it before. And some of those rules that were overlooked were, look, you know, vote by mail, when a ballot leaves the supervisor of elections property, it's not in a precinct, you know, a ballot becomes gold. And what happens with vote by mail is ballots get delivered to everybody's home, which in a sense become a precinct. And, you know, during this year, more and more people voted vote by mail. And the concern was that previously, you know, some laws, like in Florida, were that you weren't allowed to let somebody else handle your ballot or turn your ballot in. And so, but in some states, for example, in Georgia, drop boxes were put out, and there was really no way to verify if someone else was turning in your ballot because it was open 24 hours, and there was no one there next to the drop boxes in Georgia, or this was in some of the bigger city area, Atlanta area. Now they were video surveilled, so the question is now what is happening in Florida is this bill is one of the things it's doing is saying, look, if you're going to have drop boxes, they're only going to be open during the hours of the supervisor of elections in your area, and they're going to have to be manned. You're going to have to show your ID when you drop off your ballot. Now, look, from my perspective, I don't think that's too much. I've got to find out, and we should not have an issue finding people here locally. The Democrats, I know that Allison Tant was on this this committee and voted against this bill, but I'd like to get her perspective on drop boxes. Is it okay to have them open 24 hours with nobody there receiving the ballots? And maybe it's okay for in their minds to have someone be able to basically drop off 15 to 20 ballots that they've collected. I don't know, but I'd like to get their position on that. But that's the issue with this. Now there are some other parameters in this bill that, you know, raise the ire of Democrats. You know, they're saying that you have to request an absentee ballot more frequently instead of it just being automatic. And you know, that could be obviously something you could debate. But I think the drop box issue is one that I can clearly see why there needs to be some changes there. Now, the other issue is this private money that's going into the supervisor of elections offices to help them conduct an election. Now, this to me is a little bit mind-boggling. Now, look, we should be using tax dollars, whatever we have to do, to make sure we can get an election pulled off. We should not be taking money from private, from nonprofits or that are funded by private corporations. And the one that's at, the one that has the law now that they're trying to pass here in Florida is that no private money can be used by local election officials. And the reason why is because Mark Zuckerberg and his wife funded a nonprofit to the tune of $400 million to dole out money to these election supervisors to be used for drop boxes and things like that, other things, advertising. But the point becomes this, is I don't think Zuckerberg was a Trump fan. So you're taking money to ensure an election by someone who has, who's partisan. And I mean, just take for a minute, if the Koch brothers was donating, were donating money to these election supervisors to, and outlining what they specifically had to use the money for. There's more going to come out about, I think, how Zuckerberg used, or these, this nonprofit that he donated to, how these are grants. And you know, when you apply for a grant, you have to give parameters on things. And it'll be interesting to see exactly what some of the requirements were. Were there a partisan, requirements in some of these grants? Now, so the Republicans are being criticized for a section of this bill that would disallow money from the private sector to run elections from both sides. In other words, you know, it doesn't, it's not having it. It is not saying that we should take money from just conservative groups. It's saying no money. And I don't know how you can be against that. Now, should they be funded properly? Sure. And I don't think you're ever going to find an election supervisor that would like to turn money down. But I think when you start getting into these partisan groups getting involved, now, it may not be an issue. I know Leon County, I think, got $1.4 million here. And so just let me give you an example. So I know that some of the money went for security for the drop boxes. And I know from talking to Mark early here that I think we had one drop box and that it was not open 24 hours and it was manned. I think it was only out there for a week. I don't know if they checked IDs. I'd have to ask him on that. But that some of the money went to pay, from what I understand, that person manning the drop box. So what happens, who decides where the drop boxes go? Let's look at a bigger county. What happens if you put, if there were more drop boxes in areas that were more favorable to Democrats versus Republicans? Who decides that? That I think that becomes the issue from a partisan perspective, is that you've got to be very careful that when you're taking money from these groups, that it's not being used in a partisan nature. And I think that is, that's some of the complaints that some of these states have had, and that's why they're passing these laws. Now, you know, on the drop boxes, again, I think it's clear that we need to get, when we're having this debate, we need to find out where people stand on this. And I've talked about this previously. You know, do you think that someone can get a ballot in their home and that someone can basically follow up and help them fill it out and then take that ballot, go next door, collect another ballot, and keep collecting these ballots and then return them? If you, you know, if you're on board with that, that's your position, then that's something that we can debate. But just to say, and this is what I don't see happening, I don't see the media asking these Democrats who are opposed to this bill what their specific problems are. Now, I do say that I do see on the one issue of requiring people to request an absentee ballot every 4 years, they think it should just be automatic. Okay, that's clear. But I haven't heard them say why they're against drop boxes only being open and being manned and requesting an ID. Are they against that? Are Democrats against that? I think we need to get them on the record on that, and we'll try to do that here with our local officials. But again, the statewide media, that'd be a simple question. Why are you against someone manning a drop box, requesting an ID, and only allowing the person that is casting that ballot to turn that ballot in? Now, listen, we can have provisions for people who have disabilities or have health issues. That's a very small percentage, but we can have provisions for that. But other than that, is it the policy of the state Democratic Party of Florida that anybody can collect a ballot and turn it in a Dropbox, which without providing an ID. I think that's what we need to get positioned, so then we can understand where the problem is. Anyway, there'll be plenty of discussion about this over the next couple weeks, because this bill, I believe, did get passed out of committee, so there'll be floor debate on it, and we'll try to get some more information from our leaders and see where they are on it. And actually, I'll try to reach out and talk to Mark Early also. All right, when we get back in our last segment, we'll talk about the weekly COVID numbers, the trends, job numbers, and we'll talk about these misperceptions of things that are easily verifiable, but obviously the media is not doing a good job of getting the answer out, or people just don't care and they aren't reading. We'll discuss that when we get back. So stay tuned. I'm Steve Stewart. You've been listening to Above the Fold. Welcome back to Above the Fold here on Tuesday. Above the Fold is brought to you in part by Epps Decorating Center. If you're a homeowner, you should always be looking for ways to increase the value of your home, but it doesn't always have to be a major project. A fresh coat of paint can transform the interior and exterior of your home in a dramatic way, and I recommend you start with a visit to Epps Decorating Center, Tallahassee's premier Benjamin Moore paint retailer. Whether you need interior or exterior paint, high-end or commercial-grade coatings, Epps Decorating Center is ready to serve you and answer all your questions. Stop by today and get a free paint sample to start your new project. Give them a call, 385-6649. That's 385-6649, and we appreciate their sponsorship. All right, weekly COVID numbers. You can go to our website. We follow these trends. It is continuing. Things are continuing to fall. Positivity is below 3% for, I think, 13 days in a row. Hospitalizations, it was reported TMH was at zero at one point. We've got a 7-day average of 20, which is down from the high of around 160 back in January, middle of January. Cases are falling. One of the things here, so we'll see what happens with, again, as we've talked about, what policies follow. There's something in Alachua County, which is the county home to Gainesville. The county commission there is starting to look at dealing with ordinances that allow people that have been vaccinated to gather together, but the ones that have not, you can't. And so the question is, how is that going to be enforced? I guess you'll have to carry some paperwork with you and to prove that you've been vaccinated, which is, I hope that's not going to happen here. But this is part of that, quote, vaccination passport approach that I think some people are pushing. So, again, we'll see what happens with the policies. I know that the CDC has cut the recommended social distancing distance within schools by 50% from 6 feet to 3 feet. So anyway, the numbers, again, as I've said, are heading down in Leon County. Across the state, across the country, we'll see what happens in terms of the policies. Now, job numbers. Wanted to, we follow the local economy. Taos reports, I think better than most media outlets. We've got a story up on the job numbers. At the end of every year, we get our job statistics from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. These are estimates based on these algorithms that they've spent years trying to perfect. And you can imagine, when a pandemic hits, that the estimates can go awry. Well, they always go back and revise them based on other information that they can get. And so these, we've got a story up and you can look at the details. But basically what we have been reporting is that, the numbers after the pandemic lockdowns, we started to rebound and we reached a level of employment where we were sort of flat, growing wasn't happening. And that was where we were 15,000 jobs short of pre-pandemic levels. And that was, if you looked at the end of the last year, October through December. Well, the revisions now that have come out have painted a better picture for Leon County in the sense that instead of just being at 90% of the level of the pre-pandemic level, now we're at about 94%. In other words, we're about 5,000 jobs short when you compare pre-pandemic numbers. And so, you know, that's good news. The January numbers are out, and we're about 5,200 jobs short when you compare it to last January. Now, obviously, these numbers are going to change. The comparisons will change dramatically because we're going to be falling into the beginning of the pandemic months of last year. So we'll have to get an idea of where we should be. We'll have to look at, for example, March of 2019 to see what that level was, or February of 2019 to see what the levels were, because, you know, the lockdowns or the shutdowns that happened, in beginning in March has started to really obviously impact employment. And, you know, we started responding, or not responding, but rebounding would be a better word. Around May and June, it started climbing back up pretty rapidly to the rate where we are now of 145,000 people employed, compared to about 150-152 pre-pandemic. So, again, could be a lot worse things in Florida in terms of unemployment. We've talked about our employment base here, you know, with state government, universities, and the healthcare industry being sort of our floor. And so we'll have more on that in the coming days in terms of how we were able to sustain, you know, certain levels of employment. Now, moving on to the perceptions of COVID, there is a poll out by reputable pollsters. I don't know if that's not an oxymoron. Looking at the perceptions of different of Republicans and Democrats on things related to COVID-19. And one that I thought was indicative, or is really showed, I think, the problem we're having with the media overall and how we get information out, is not doesn't favor Democrats or Republicans here. But they asked the question of what percentage of the people that get COVID end up being hospitalized, and they what they did is they graphed the response of people based on if they're Republican or Democrat. Now, the answer to that is about 4.5%. So if you were asked that question and you said you were given a choice of between 1% and 5%, you would be correct. Well, only 25% of Republicans answered between 1% and 5%, and only 10% of Democrats answered between 1% and 5%. The numbers that are staggering is that over 50% of Republicans answered over 20%, which is actually four times what the reality is, and over 68% of Democrats responded at over 20%. Now, if you take this and look at it, both Republicans and Democrats, the majorities, are way off from reality. And this is a statistic that is very easily verified. Take the number of reported, take the number of hospitalizations and divide it by the number of reported cases. You get 4.2% in the state of Florida. So the question becomes, why are people so misinformed on this simple statistic? First of all, is it not being reported, or is it being drowned out by the media covering, you know, other issues of aspects of COVID-19? Is it, you know, Republicans and Democrats just aren't interested in retaining that type of information? Because, you know, I would think one of the first things I would look at, you know, if I'm becoming afraid of catching COVID, I was looking at the death rate and looking at how many people were in the hospital. And so it's alarming from a standpoint of other things other than COVID. In other words, just imagine if people are off on other issues that aren't as easily measured. And, you know, there's a number of them that come to mind. You start talking about, law enforcement issues, the perspective of crime, the perspective of poverty. I mean, to me, this is more of an issue of how we get information out, and it should be a major red flag. So we're going to continue to talk about this in the coming weeks. Look at some other issues that are maybe the perceptions are so way off, and not to cast criticism to Republicans or Democrats, they were both off on this one. What other issues are they both off on? I think that would be something that would be instructive on trying to decide first how it happened. Is it the media's fault and how they're reporting it, or is it, you know, individuals' problems because they just don't retain this information. Probably, as I've found as I've gotten older, is a combination of a lot of different things. But we'll try to focus on that. All right, well, that's all we have for today. Thanks for joining me. It's Tuesday. We'll be back on Thursday. There's a school board meeting tonight and a city commission meeting tomorrow, so we'll have a lot to talk about Thursday. So don't forget to tune in. All right, have a great afternoon. I'm Steve Stewart. You've been listening to Above the Fold. Waiting.